You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jim DeFede is going to join us later in the program. I can say legendary local journalist Jim DeFede, holding on to old-fashioned journalistic values at a time that it is harder and harder to do that. Jim DeFede has been holding people accountable in South Florida for a really long time. So we've got a lot of ground to cover with him. But before we do that, Billy, I wanted to talk to you about a handful of things in Miami. You have argued with Whittingham and with Mike Ryan about Mel Reese. I drove past Mel Reese the other day. It's a beautiful piece of property. It's a nice piece of land. It is something that should not be given away in a time that South Florida, our real estate is worth a great deal. But there's another hustle going on in Mel Reese in the shadows of the hustle we've been talking about for months.
And every time you drive by there, don't you think like, oh, this is going to be a mess? Whether it's the remediation, the construction, once that property is open and active, like...
Oh, I can't even imagine,
right?
As terrible as... I mean, you're always talking about the infrastructure here, and I will... For those of you who do not know Miami, we do not have the infrastructure for what is presently in town. And
popsicle sticks and Elmer's glue.
And yeah. Our town is built upside down. There's next to no reason. Where this Mel Reese Park is in the middle of everything is already a congested nightmare. The idea of bringing cranes in there to construct all day is going to have in the center of our city just plumes of smoke into the airport sky.
To the south, you have the 836, the Dolphin Expressway, one of the busiest, most traversed, traveled roadways in the entire state of Florida. Back in the early 2000s, an engineer for the Miami-Dade Expressway Authority estimated that in order to get the 836 expressway running at a reasonable rate of speed, not even the speed limit of 50, 60, 65 miles an hour, just a reasonable rate of speed at high traffic hours at rush hour, they would need to expand it into a 18-lane highway. That was 20 years ago, Dan. It's going to be gridlock on the 836, gridlock on Lejeune, to the west of the property.
Our city is already groaning under the weight of anywhere you go, it takes forever to get to, no matter how long or big your highways, because there are too many people in town.
And Lejeune is the roadway to the airport, the Miami International Airport, which is the economic heartbeat of the whole town. And then you have a residential neighborhood, and then you have the river, and it's going to be a total mess. And you pass by there, and you're like, well, this is kind of peaceful and tranquil, this being just an open-air golf course that's used by a gaggle of people, the only public golf course in the city. You're kind of like... oh, they're going to just tear this shit up. They're going to tear it up, and it's going to be a disaster, particularly because they have a traffic impact study that they've been hiding. They've been covering up since 2018, and that's a 2018 traffic impact study. Imagine that today.
Covering up how?
They just haven't released it. We know that they did it, and they've refused to put it out, while people have been saying, well, what about the traffic impact study? And let me tell you, these traffic impact studies are bought and paid for by real estate developers or sports team owners. They're always like, oh, no, it's going to be fine, and they're always bullshit. If they're too scared to put it out, you better believe that it says some pretty terrible, terrible things. Now it seems the town actually is pretty quiet. I don't know if anybody's noticed that. You look outside and Ocean Drive and Miami Beach and the traffic. It's pretty chill right now because the looks like the crypto cowboys have left town because the boom times are
over.
We'll
get to that in a second. So, we'll get to the crypto. Yeah. But what is the next real estate hustle at Mel Reese?
So back in 2018, there were several items that the city of Miami put on a referendum for the voters to vote on. One of which was Mel Reese. Should we amend the city charter in order to allow for the city to negotiate a no bid deal on this property at Mel Reese, the largest parcel owned by the city of Miami. Another of the items was, should we allow the city to move forward with a contract to sell a parcel of waterfront property on the Miami River? By city charter, we have to go to referendum in order to sell a city-owned piece of waterfront property. Here's the thing, though. On that property, unlike Mel Reese and Interfort Lauderdale, there was what they call an RFP, a request for proposal, that went through a legitimate chartered process in the city of Miami, meaning there was competition, different developers were allowed to submit proposals and bid on that very valuable piece of property. Whereas with the Mel Reese thing, it was like, no, what we're saying is we're going to waive the law. We're going to change the law just to help these particular guys. That didn't happen here. So a company, a developer's called Adler, came in and made a proposal. They won the deal and they put it on the ballot, and it won. It won with like 64 some odd percent of the vote, as did the Mel Reese deal, which passed as well. The only thing that failed by like 80% of the vote was the strong mayor proposition that Mayor Ponzi Postalita Francis Suarez put on the ballot. Those were the three referendums in 2018. What they were going to do with this city-owned property, this is home to what they call the Miami River Center, or the MRC. This is where all of the city business is done outside of City Hall. City Hall in Dinner Key Marina is a historic, beautiful, cool, old, little building right on the water. It's barely enough to house the offices that are there, which is the mayor, the city manager, the city attorney, the clerk, and the five city commissioners. All the other business of the city is done elsewhere. There's a whole other police headquarters in downtown Miami, and right on the Miami River is this ancient building, really falling apart, expensive to maintain, but all of the city business. You need to pull a permit, you need building, you need code. All the daily grind happens right there in this building. So what Adler was going to do is, first, they were going to buy it in a competitive bidding process. Then they were going to knock it down and redevelop the entire river. This monstrous development with over 30,000 square feet of retail space, four condo towers, on and on. The usual. Pave the river and put up a parking lot. Part of the deal
was... This is not a historic building you're talking about, though. This is a dump.
It's an old shitty building.
It's a dump, and it should be knocked down.
Absolutely.
But should be knocked down in a way that has order and achieves maximum value for the land that
the taxpayers
has
that own
worth.
It. Yeah. But part of it is that Adler agreed to build a new MRC because the city has to conduct this business somewhere. So part of the deal was they would build and lease back a significant part of the property within one of the towers they were building for the city government. That was voted on in the language of the referendum back in 2018. And what we've been hearing a lot from Witte and Mike John Ruiz and Interfort Lauderdale is we've been hearing that, well, the people of Miami voted for Mel Reese, right? So we should give away that property, which is not what they voted on, but nonetheless, they made the very compelling argument that it's the will of the people. Well, this also was the will of the people, and this was on the referendum explicitly, and the people voted for it overwhelmingly. But now what the commissioners are saying is, well, we're not going to build our new city government building on this property on the river. They've been blocking this property. One of the commissioners in particular, Diaz de la Portilla, who we talked about last week, has a little problem with the drinks and the ladies and cars crashing and such. But they've been blocking this development, and now they're talking about, very seriously, despite the fact that the voters voted on this, they want to move the city government building to Mel Reese. They want to become one of the first tenants on the property and create a whole... You know, bring a captive audience and basically draw people from the city who need to do business with the city to this property to buttress the investment and the value of what is now effectively Jorge Mas and David Beckham's property. So what they're now doing is that's the thing. All of this is a real estate hustle. And if you follow the money and you follow the real estate, the property, this is what's happening. What they're doing is it's a total bait and switch. After they argued that we need to do this Mel Reese thing because the people voted on it, the people also voted on this other Miami River project. And now they're in a meeting last week talking about, hey, why don't we just fuck the voters and fuck these other developers who went through the legal process of competitive bidding and getting a deal on this property and agreeing to build the offices for the city. Let's put it over here. You know, because we know which side our tostada is buttered on. Everything is in service of the oligarchs of Inter Miami. It's absolutely wild. Nobody can really understand it, where this came from and how this happened. But everything in the Mel Reese deal is corrupt, and everything that will spring out of that poisonous tree will be corrupt. the park space that we're supposed to have to make up for the lost green space and park space in Mel Reese, that will be a real estate hustle. Whether it's this MRC deal will be a real estate hustle, and all of it will cost the taxpayers money. So the idea that Mel Reese is all privately developed and paid for, that this isn't going to be subsidized by the taxpayers and isn't going to screw the people of Miami, is a fucking lie. Francis Suarez knows it. All of those commissioners who voted for it know it. The commissioner we had on, Manolo Reyes, the only commissioner with the cojones to vote against it, knows it. But it's happening right before our eyes, this multi-billion dollar land heist in broad daylight.
Jim DeFede is going to join us in about 10 minutes. Again, legendary local journalist. We're going to talk to him about his documentary and some other things. But you use the verb spring. The name Larry Spring, what does it mean to you? What should it mean to our audience?
Larry Spring was the CFO of Miami back during the Great Recession. It was a difficult time economically for the entire country, but he led the city in the shadiest way. They played a shell game with money. They were moving money around between accounts. They were misusing and misappropriating funds. They were lying to investors and to the SEC about how financially solvent or insolvent the city was, about the value of their bonds.
Tuesday in Miami.
It was a major duty securities fraud. And he was allowed to resign at the time with a golden parachute. He sprung right out of City Hall, a deal negotiated by City Manager Tony Crapp. You can't make this up. City Manager Crapp negotiated this deal.
Two P's, one P?
Two P's, PP. And in the wake of that, the SEC found that this fraud had taken place in the city. It was laid on one of his subordinates, one of the chief financial officer of the city's subordinates, who got into a whole mess of trouble. And of course, the taxpayers of the city of Miami had to pay a fine in excess of $1 million for the fraud that their own government was perpetuating on them. And now they have to pay the fine, of course, to make it right with the federal government.
All of that fact.
Yes.
Everything that you just mentioned,
yes.
Something that you would think would disable somebody from ever being able to get back into power of any sort.
And his house was foreclosed on at the same time during what was alleged may have been a mortgage fraud where he misrepresented his address.
Forfeitures of credibility, some
yes.
of them possibly criminal.
Mismanaged his own funds, mismanaged the city's funds, left with a golden parachute.
Prosecuted for any of these things?
No, of course not. No. The city was. Civilly by the SEC. And of course, the taxpayers, again, who were the victims of the crime, wound up paying the fine for said
crime.
Okay,
so he comes through and he just grabs a bunch of things from government, as many people do. And then what happens?
Well, last week, he was just reappointed this chief financial officer of the city of Miami by the new city manager, Art Noriega. I really don't know what else to say about it. But in the words of Francis Suarez, if you put garbage in, you're going to get garbage out. This is a guy who was just fired from his position as city manager in North Miami. This was a guy who Art Noriega, the current city manager, who was the CEO of the Miami Parking Authority, which is a real estate racket disguised as a parking racket and towing racket. This guy, he hired him on the board of the Miami Parking Authority. Then he hired him in 2020 on a contract to help navigate the city's finances during the pandemic, and now has effectively promoted him, but really rehired him to the CFO position, a position that he turned into really a criminal organization following the Great Recession. And why is the question, of course. And what I will say about that, the reason why a guy like Larry Spring continues to work in government, get golden parachutes from these various jobs, including the job he was shit-canned from in North Miami.
Never any bad consequences.
Never. Because guys like that know where the bodies are buried. They have the compromise. They have the goods on people like Art Noriega. And as evidenced by the shit he pulled back in Miami when he was CFO the last time, he's willing to do what it takes to cover everybody's asses and get away with it. And so a guy like that in this kind of environment is constantly rewarded and never held accountable because they're looking for stand-up guys. In a mob, in an organized crime operation, in a racketeering organization, which is what this government is, they look for stand-up guys. They look for guys that get the job done and keep their mouth shut. And he's one of those guys.
We're going to get to Jim DeFede in a second, but I always learn something when we're talking to you here, and please elaborate. You said a parking and towing racket. You're talking about the business. They've got a couple of towing companies. They've got to be two of the bigger economies on South Beach they just drag people out of here, and they are assassins. I live in a Mad Max universe where they will drag my car out of anywhere with no warning, and the tickets are really expensive. And you're saying this is all a hustle? Where does this money go?
Well, I was talking about the city of Miami, but in the city of Miami Beach, it's no better. It's a duopoly that I think actually the two towing companies are basically owned by more or less the same people. So it's a monopoly disguised as a duopoly.
All of whom are encased in a lot of bulletproof glass because everyone who goes there is pissed off because a lot of those people have been wronged and you feel violated when they take your car from a place and you're like, wait a minute, I wasn't parked illegally exactly.
And they only take cash. And of course, they have an ATM machine with a usurious strip club like fee on it, you know, to get your money
out. It's a total extortion. But where does this money go? How does it get shared?
And what they do is that, you know, basically,
very profitable.
Legally or not, because of course, the first thing you have to do is go get your car back and pay for it and then fight it later, of course. It's like you could beat the rap, but you can't beat the ride. And you got to be out of pocket hundreds of dollars on this just to get your car back. But they're basically seizing really the most valuable asset that most people have outside of a home, if you own a home. I mean, if you own your car, it is the most expensive piece of property that you own and the most important property in a town like this where there's no public transit. There's no ability to make your way around. It's very much a car culture in this community. And you have companies that effectively have a deal with the city. And what you hear a lot from the commissioners and the city manager is it's a necessary evil. Because obviously, if you came home and someone was blocking your driveway or your entrance, you'd be like, tow this asshole, of course. And and the tow truck companies would be your heroes in that situation. But in many cases, that's not that's not what's happening. What's happening is you have people who are misrepresenting the what they call the towing bill of rights, which means that if you come and they're lifting your car up, you could say, yo, dude, I'm here. My bad. And there's no drop fee. But sometimes they'll extort a drop fee out of you because people don't know your rights. They'll be like, well, I already lifted it. So that's $20 or $50 or $100 or whatever. And there's actually no
terrorists. These tow truck drivers, they're terrorists. They do that. You get up near them and you're like, wait a minute, I'm right here. This isn't illegal. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, $50, $100, $75.
That's extortion. And it's illegal.
And it's a big, giant business here.
And I've never seen anybody arrested for it or held accountable for it. And as you can imagine, this tow truck racket where people can legally steal your car and hold it for ransom, you can imagine how generous they are to our local politicians with donations to their political committees.
What else can you tell us about this business, though? Do you have other details for us on how the parking and towing, how it works, who gets that money? Because it's a lot of money. They stopped during the pandemic. For about 18 months, you can park wherever it is that you wanted to. But during the pandemic, they stopped doing some of that, and now they have resumed, and the fees are exorbitant for anywhere you park that you're not supposed to be without paying.
Not really. In Miami Beach, they went into residential neighborhoods where people were stuck at home. They weren't leaving for work during the day, so they left their cars parked out on the street because their buildings don't have sufficient parking. And the parking authority was coming around during a time in which the government put people in a lockdown, and they were ticketing those cars. So basically, they forced everybody to stay at home, park their cars on the street, and then went around while people were out of work and broke and ticketed their cars. That money in particular goes to the city. The ticket money does. The tow money goes to these private tow companies that then kick back some of that money to cops, to politicians, to developers, anybody who basically assists them in this legalized racket. And what we had was we had an audit that was done by the city of Miami Beach that was commissioned by the city of Miami Beach that exposed a lot of the inequities and the fuckery occurring within these tow truck companies. And then they didn't do anything about it. They refused to release it. People had to get an early draft of it. The media did via a public records request. They didn't want to release the findings. It was an audit is what it was.
They made a reality show, South Beach Towing, around it.
Oh, God. All scripted, by the way.
Some of the worst television
scripted
I've ever seen in my life. Some of the worst television ever created in the history of creating things.
I've created a lot of bad content, and I will say nothing. Nothing comes close to the quality of South Beach Towing.
Before we get to Jim DeFede, are you going to take a crypto victory lap? Because everything that you said was going to happen with Francis Suarez and Miami Crypto, he is now denying things that are on tape with him saying, like, he's just pretending that he didn't endorse this with the full endorsement of his mayoral office, as if using his political power as no one in the country was using it to make crypto credible from a political position.
He's a crypto mayor. Own it. He wanted it. He can have it. Own it. Miami Coin has lost over 98% since its all-time high last year. So if you invested $100 in Miami Coin last September, you now have less than $2. The average gallon of gas in the state of Florida is $4.89 right now and rising. So you could barely buy a cafecito with the money you would have left from losing it in Miami Coin. I refuse to take a victory lap for people losing their money, whether they're stupid or not, but they're being preyed upon by people who are in a cult, in an economic cult, selling imaginary coins to people and stealing their money. It is a Ponzi scheme and people are losing their shirt. This whole concept of, you know, never sell, hold on forever. People need that money now. They need to cash out. They need money to pay for gas. They need money to pay for groceries. They need to be liquid. And they're finding themselves having lost an extraordinary amount of money in these cryptocurrencies. And in some cases, not even able to cash out because some of these companies like Celsius have shut down the ability of people to trade or withdraw their funds. It's basically like an old school run on the bank, but with no FDIC protection and no guarantees by the federal government and no bailout. Speaking of bailouts, though, I do want to say one thing. The Miami Herald this week finally released an editorial, an op-ed about the Proud Boys, a story that we have covered better on this rinky-dink show than the Miami Herald has covered in years.
Hey man, watch what you're saying over rinky dink.
I'm talking about because
the New York Times, which we grifted off their reporting and we did an anonymous voice. You are saying we did more than the Herald because the Herald did nothing with a story about the idea that a hate group would be overtaking some Miami politics quietly somehow.
Not only is the hate group hijacked one of the two major political parties here in Miami-Dade, but one of the leaders of that group, one of the co-founders of Latinos for Trump from that group of Proud Boys, was just charged with seditious conspiracy against the United States of America. It was not even the top story at the Miami Herald when it happened. A Miamian was charged, I repeat, with seditious conspiracy against the United States. It wasn't the top story at the Herald. Why? They have been petrified of this story for whatever reason. Reminds me of the Elian Gonzalez days in the newsroom. You would know more about that than I do. But I don't know what's happening. I don't know if it's just good old-fashioned incompetence.
A newsroom disconnected from its base? Or what do you...
I think a newsroom scared of its base, afraid to alienate its base.
When you say same as Elian Gonzalez, are you saying a newsroom afraid to run too hardline counter to Cubans because in this town... that can be business death. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. Or just good old-fashioned incompetence from a decimated newsroom in a dying operation. I'm not sure which, you know, because oftentimes when I think something's corruption, it's just good old-fashioned incompetence. And then sometimes it becomes corrupt when they try to cover up the incompetence. But I don't know what happened here. I know that this reminds me of the good old days of the Herald when they missed the Watergate story and have been trying to catch up ever since. The Watergate burglars were from Miami, and it took some reporters from the Washington Post to come down to Miami following the money to break that story. The Miami Herald has been scooped on the Proud Boys story by every other news organization in the country.
They have not covered this story well or at all, really, right?
Right, and I'm not exactly sure why. They finally came out with an editorial that's like, well, this is super bad, guys. Like, okay, thank you. Better late than never. But where the hell have they been? Why has the Miami Herald had a seditious conspirator against the United States of America under their noses for years and have done none of that coverage? None of it. It's bizarre to me.
We will talk about the decimation of journalism and the history of corruption in Miami with an expert at the center of the decay, Jim DeFede, next.
Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. Springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes, and it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. I've had it in my home for many, many years. I love it. Springtime to me, we love to travel. And I love the fact that no matter where I am in the world, I can keep an eye on my home thanks to SimpliSafe Home Security. SimpliSafe blankets your whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more, plus a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than a dollar a day. SimpliSafe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. That's simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Billy, I do not know what your Mount Rushmore of South Florida journalists is, but Jim DeFede, if he's not on, if he's not carved into the mountaintop, is one of the guys vying for mountaintop appraisal, is he not?
Oh, absolutely. He came to Miami at such a crucial moment in our identity crisis, if you will, in our evolution or development, and was rational, objective eyes for people who couldn't or didn't want to see the forest for the trees. Jim came in and just blasted a spotlight, part of a murderer's row of journalistic talent at the golden age of the Miami New Times, our alt-weekly, the Village Voice of Miami, if you will, throughout the 90s, and has just made an indelible mark from the New Times to the Herald to CBS Miami.
We're going to welcome him in now and talk about his documentary as well, but let's welcome him into the conversation that we were having. With depleted resources all over South Florida, Jim, and welcome in as a South Floridian and a man who has protected this area from corruption and exposed corruption at every turn. Can you even fathom what has overflooded through the gates of journalism here, where journalism has fallen apart to such an extent that you can get away with more in Miami than you've ever been able to get away with?
You're 100% right. It's insane the level that goes unchecked here, in part because the failure of the media, the failure of corporate-owned media, whether it's CBS or the Miami Herald or any of the other news agencies, just by losing resources, have not been able to cover a very difficult community to the way that it should be. You know, when I was at Miami New Times, I used to write critical stories of the Miami Herald. Back then, in the 90s, I wrote a story once called The Incredible Shrinking Herald, where I lamented how they were cutting staff and everything was going back. I look back on that now. Those were the glory days. I was bemoaning the glory days. That's when things were actually good, when you actually had an investigative team that was fully staffed, that you had reporters covering city and county hall. That's long gone.
You had a newsroom. There's no newsroom anymore.
Well, the Herald doesn't have a newsroom. I haven't been in, part of it is COVID. I haven't been in the CBS newsroom in 2 years. I'm not wearing pants. I haven't worn pants in 2 years.
I love that as a sentence. Thank you. I'm not wearing pants needs to be shouted with an echo across South Florida. Jim DeFede not wearing any pants. Let's talk about politics in Miami, Billy, because I know that you wanted to bring, before we get to his documentary and what that's about, I know that you wanted to just cover the appalling history that is Miami politics and our ability to repeat history again and again, learning nothing from the corruption.
Well, I'm really encouraged because, you know, I come in here and scream that the sky is falling every week and that this is a historic time in corruption, in the scope of the corruption, in the obviousness of the corruption and the utter lack of accountability. And Jim has covered this for decades now, but I look back, Jim, on the days of Commissioner Joe Gersten and Commissioner Miller Dawkins and Commissioner Art Teal, as almost quaint. Art Teal, who I refer to as the last politician in Miami to have any shame or self-respect. But that is a tragic story. But what he was accused of, what any of these guys were accused of, what some of them were arrested for, is almost charming. It's petty corruption in light of the scale and scope of the hundreds of millions and even billions of dollars that we're seeing transacted today. Am I being hyperbolic on this show or is this?
No, so I always like to think of it as there are different phases. Miami is as corrupt, maybe more corrupt now than it ever was in the past. But the corruption is different. When you're referring to like the 90s, That's when I came. I came to Miami in 91, and there was Operation Green Palm. And I remember, like, oh my goodness, it does seem quaint by comparison. Miller Dawkins, a Miami City commissioner, sitting in a car in the parking lot of a Denny's, shoving $100,000 of bribe money into his pockets and saying that, well, the FBI will never be able to find this money, as two FBI agents in a van a half a block away are listening to the entire affair and videotaping it. In hindsight, it seems quaint. Cesar Odio getting kickbacks for a minor contract at the airport. All of that they went to prison for. We're still corrupt today. We just have gotten smarter about the corruption. You don't have to be in little secret rooms shoving money into your coat pockets. You can just do it in an outlandish sort of way. You just do it big. And part of it is through campaign contributions, and part of it is the corruption that comes from all the money that enters into politics. It's gotten more sophisticated. People would ask me, is Miami more corrupt than anywhere else? New York was vastly corrupt in the early 1900s when Boss Tweed controlled Tammany Hall. Chicago was corrupt in the 20s and 30s. LA was corrupt in the 50s and 60s. Miami's heyday for corruption was the 80s and 90s. Now, New York, Chicago, LA, Miami, they're still corrupt. They've just gotten smarter about their corruption. They know not to be stuffing money in their pockets at a Denny's parking lot.
Well, they don't have to. Now they have a crypto wallet, or now they just transact a major real estate deal on behalf of an oligarch, and then they get their campaign coffers and political committees filled up with cash, or have delusions of grandeur and think they can run for higher office, which leads me to party politics here in South Florida. I'm perpetually petrified because the Miami of today is the America of tomorrow. And as I watch what's happening with not one, but both of our political parties down here, and I hate to engage in both sidesism here, but the Democrats locally appear to be falling apart. The Republicans have been hijacked by a hate group, and leadership is either encouraging it, or at worst, or at best, enabling it. What is happening down here, and does this bode well for the future?
No. How could you set that question up and then ask, and is everything going to turn out right?
A moronic way to frame the whole thing. We can agree that he petered out at the end. He just had his tapestry of doom, and then are we going to be okay? No, of course not. Listen to yourself. No, you idiot. Did you not hear what it is that you just said? How could we be okay after that? The question itself scared the out of both of us.
Here's the thing. I ask stupid questions for a living. That's what I do. And what Jim knows.
You petered out.
Jim, having co-starred in one of our documentaries, Cocaine Cowboys, The Kings of Miami, now streaming on Netflix.
Oh, there you did it. You did it. What? He said to me, he called me before and he said, I got to work a plug-in for Cocaine Cowboys. There he just did it.
That's the type
of corruption that we now come to expect.
Unbelievable. It's what? Fraud.
What I'm saying
is, hypocrite.
In my documentaries, I get to cut all my questions out. So a lot of what I do is ask stupid questions to set my interview subjects off so they'll give me a colorful answer that I can put in the documentary.
How scared are you, Defeaty? How scared are you? This is the most corrupt Miami you've ever seen by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, it's very, very bad. But the question about the politics of right now, look, the Democratic Party is barely in existence.
Yeah.
You could put it on a milk carton if we did that still. And people would wonder, where is the Democratic Party today? Not just in Miami-Dade, but in Florida in general.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party, I'm going to tell you something. I've talked to enough political folks. You know, Dade County was a stronghold for Democrats. Joe Biden only won Dade County by 9 points this last time after Barack Obama won it by almost 30. Hillary Clinton won it by almost 30. I'm telling you, it would not shock me if Ron DeSantis wins Dade County, not just comes out of Dade County just a little bit behind, which is what Republicans try to do. He could actually win Dade County. And it's not just because the Proud Boys have taken over the inner workings of the Republican Executive Committee or influence it. There is a tidal shift of anger and resentment that you see happening in politics today that is polarizing. Again, I don't like to do the whataboutism on both sides either, but on both sides. And that anger, there is no rationality anymore. There is no having a conversation about politics anymore. And that's what scares me. Nothing breaks through anymore. nothing breaks through. So you can have a conversation and try to, which I do every week on my show. I'll take my cue from Billy, as I do every week on Sunday morning on Facing South Florida on CBS at 11:30. There you go, Billy. But you try to have that conversation, but you don't know if you're just preaching to the choir. Now, I realize the old saying is, why do they preach to the choir? Because that's how you get them to sing. But at the same time, are you changing any minds? Are you providing enough information to where someone is even open to changing their minds? And we are not open to changing our minds about anything anymore in this country.
The question was doomsaying. The answer has no hope in it. Let's talk about something else that you're selling here. Your documentary, you have got
something else cheerful. Let's talk about the Surfside building tragedy in which 98 people died. Does this show come with Zoloft, or do you have to get that elsewhere?
Is it
just DraftKings that sponsors the show, or is there also some medication that goes with it?
What is your documentary about, and why is it that people should be watching it?
So obviously, we know about what happened at Surfside. The building came down, 98 people killed as a result of it. The basic behind the why the building came down is its own story of corruption and incompetence and government betrayal, of not making sure that the systems were in place, even if there were systems in place, that the checks and balances were there to keep a building standing upright. I will tell you that part of that comes from American arrogance. And I'll say that. I think we in America have a certain arrogance that says to ourselves, buildings don't fall in the United States. That's something that happens in the third world. That's something that happens in Mexico or Nicaragua or Cuba. In the United States, we're a first world country. Buildings don't collapse. Well, this building collapsed, and it was completely predictable, and it was completely our fault. What I'm looking at is when that building came down, 101 people fell with it. 98 of them died. One survivor we know about, Jonah Handler, the boy who was pulled out of the rubble on the back of a firefighter and carried out. There was a TV camera there to record that moment. What most people don't know is that there were two other people who survived the collapse. Two women, Angela Gonzalez and her 15-year-old daughter, Devin. They were thrown when their ninth floor condo unit literally split in half. They fell from that unit and fell more than five stories onto the debris pile below as the rest of the building cascaded down around them. Angela shattered her pelvis. Devin, a young volleyball star who plays at Miami High and also plays for some private teams in Broward, she fractured her leg, bone sticking out. And what we have done is we've documented how they survived that fall, which is miraculous in itself. The firefighters who rescued them, who risked their own lives to get to her when there were no cameras around to record it. For the past year, we've been documenting how she, Devin Gonzalez, 15-year-old Devin Gonzalez, is fighting to get back and using volleyball and that drive to want to get back on the volleyball court and play competitive volleyball again as she goes and meets with doctors, physical therapists, and begins slowly training with one of her coaches to get her back into shape. She hopes to be able to play this November. It's perfect for you guys because there's a sports angle, as Billy told me earlier. That's always important. But the sports
really
angle is
unnecessarily aggressive. The audience does not need your sports angle. The building collapsing and the tragedy is enough without the volleyball story. That it is a lovely story, I don't dispute. The audience was plenty moved once we've got to the building collapsing. Don't dumb it down for my people.
For your people. Suddenly they're your people. I've listened to your show. I know your people. I'm your people. You need to dumb it down for me, too. So that's fine. But it is. It's like so Devin's father died in the collapse as well. So it's also about how that family is dealing with the death of their father. And to some extent, all that Devin's mother wants, Angela, is to be that crazy, screaming volleyball mom that she was before. She just wants that part of her life back. Devin wants that part of her life back as well, to be on the court. And so it's fascinating to watch. We were there the first time that she was given clearance to be able to jump. And I'm not talking about trying to jump high over the net. I'm just talking about being able to jump onto a 6-inch platform and land securely. And just watching that moment, and then how this kid who went through the most horrific year, multiple surgeries, terrible pain, the emotional anguish, just suddenly lets out a smile as big as you can imagine the first time she's allowed to jump. It actually gives you a little bit of hope out of something tragic that happened that night in Surfside.
Last year, Jim DeFede wrote and produced Bonded by Tragedy, 30 Days in Surfside, an incredible documentary for CBS News. Through the eyes of the first responders, now for the one-year anniversary, he is releasing this two-parter about the experience of the victims and the survivors. It premieres June 22nd and June 23rd, two nights in a row, 7 to 8, CBS in Miami. Two one-hour specials written and produced by Jim DeFede.
Anything else that people that you want people to know about this? Well, because we're sending them to an appointed time and place, which isn't where and how people watch, or a lot of people watch television anymore. So tell people.
It'll be online as well. It'll be available online and streaming for the future. I think that as we approach the anniversary next week, it's not just about the 98 people who died. One of the things that we are also looking at is, in some ways, those 98 people who died, their lives are frozen in time, and they're remembered in a revered way, just like anyone who dies. Unfortunately, they sort of become that frozen moment. I've been looking at and spending a lot of time with the families who have been coping with that pain, families who have openly discussed with me, some have thought about suicide, others who have wondered if their marriage will survive. I've dealt with family members who just had to not just leave Florida but leave the country. One moved to Africa because they found that the pain and misery that they found in Africa was the only place they could relate their own pain and misery. These families are going through torture and continue to go through torture and will for the rest of their lives. It's almost as if that day became a demarcation point for all the families who survived and lost loved ones. There was their life before June 24th, 2021, and there's their life after, which is why part two of my documentary is called Surviving Surfside Year One.
Jim, on a happier note, I want to talk about politicians in Miami-Dade County from both sides of the aisle. There's that term, both sides. Again, I hate it, but it happens to be true. Kowtowing to a regime in Qatar who is famous for being anti-Semitic, misogynistic, homophobic, also pays the Cuban regime for effectively doctors who work for 10% of their earnings, in addition to enslaving immigrant populations to build infrastructure and trains and World Cup stadiums. And here is Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava, the mayor of Miami-Dade County, a progressive who won by about the margin that Joe Biden did in 2018. But she went along with Alex Diaz-Laportilla, a Republican from the city of Miami, who rails against the criminal regime in Cuba, but seems totes cool with Qatar, went along with Christine King from the city of Miami, went along with Oliver Gilbert and Keon Hardiman, county commissioners. I'm just utterly baffled about this trip that was set up by the mayor's political consultant, who was very involved in the running of the county government, Christian Ulvert, who also, as it turns out, is a registered foreign agent paid by the government in Qatar, and who went along with this delegation, but it wasn't reported that he was going along with the delegation because, oh, she claims he was not there in her capacity as my consultant, but in there in the capacity of the Qatari consultant. I'm so
what is the question?
Baffled by this.
Yeah, well, was there a question?
No, there's not. What the f*** is happening?
Okay, very good question.
What baffles me is that you're baffled by this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a free trip to a country where they're going to be feted like sultans themselves. Yeah. They are going to be given wine and dined and given a wonderful experience. You know, boondoggle junkets have been a way of life in South Florida for a long time. We send people to the air show in France every year to look at planes and say to themselves, oh yeah, we should have planes fly to Miami. We already have planes fly to Miami. Junkets are a part of it. Yes, now you want to make a moral code about the fact that this particular country is a terrible country and does awful things. And so why would they in any way tacitly support it by going there? I asked Joe Biden if he ends up in Saudi Arabia next week, the same sort of question. I think the idea of reputation laundering, which is what the Qatari government is doing, they're trying to burnish their reputation by bringing in outsiders and photo ops and the rest of it. It's something that we love in South Florida. We live on reputation laundering. One of the first columns I wrote at the Miami Herald was about two pillars of society who died, Leonard Miller and George Batchelor. Leonard Miller, the founder of Lennar Homes, and George Batchelor, one of the giants of Miami aviation going back decades. And when they passed away, the Herald gave incredible glowing tributes and obits to both men about how generous they were and how wonderful they were and all the money they donated. You know, yeah, but nobody asked the question in South Florida, how do you make that money? And in the case of Leonard Miller, it was pointed out that, you know, the Herald obituary at the time, and I was working at the Herald. The Herald obituary at the time pointed out, you know, he had been cleared of wrongdoing after Hurricane Andrew questioned the value of the homes and the quality of the homes being built in South Dade. Well, yeah. And then I went and pulled the report and found out they wanted to indict him, but the statute of limitations had expired after 1 year of construction. And the reason that the statute was set so ridiculously low was because the Lennar Corporation went to Tallahassee and got them to create that low standard so that there was a statute of limitations that only lasted a year. George Batchelor, the other stalwart of the community at the time, was a guy who, hand to God, the Herald had written stories about the fact that he was an old-time Miami guy, didn't appreciate Cubans in Miami, and when his aviation business, when he started hearing people speaking Spanish, he posted a note saying, do not speak Spanish at work.
Jesus.
They thought that they just meant that they couldn't speak like to customers in Spanish. The next day, he was walking through the employee cafeteria and heard a couple of mechanics speaking Spanish to one another. And so he went back, wrote another memo that he issued to the entire staff saying, if you keep speaking Spanish, maybe I should just pay you people in pesos. That was not that long ago. And then when he dies, because he gave a lot of money to UM, because they both gave a lot of money to UM, they get celebrated as historic figures. And we wonder why we're corrupt. Because it's all about money at the end. If you have enough money, you can forget everything else. You can give enough money away to put blinders on people. They will never ask questions about how you got.
Jim, thank you for being on with us. Always good seeing you. Again, before you get out of here, the documentary and the Sunday show, tell people where to find you.
Documentary is the Wednesday and Thursday, the 22nd and 23rd from 7 to 8 p.m. on CBS. It'll also be streaming at cbs.com. And on Sunday mornings, 11:30 on CBS, Facing South Florida, unless the Dolphins are losing, then we shift to 8:30 in the morning on Sundays during football season.
An old-fashioned journalism show, a Sunday local show. You've been doing a lot of good work for a long time. Thank you, sir, for being on with us.
Anytime, Dan.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Corbin, before we get out of here for the week, Scarface has an anniversary worth celebrating today. You as a film guy, as a guy who can celebrate all the amazing things that Scarface is, including that Al Israel is not Hispanic, neither is the grand majority of the cast, and Pacino's accent is ridiculous, but it is, when not culturally appropriating in a way that is deeply offensive to Hispanics, a classic that I love just as much as you do.
It's been 39 years, Dan. 39 years since Scarface was released in cinemas to less than stellar reviews and pretty mediocre box office. It is obviously, in the decades since, become a classic, a legendary film. You might have just referred to it as a minstrel show and not so many words, but
I will still stop on it every time. It's on my television all the time.
Featuring the great Cuban-American actors Al Pacino, Robert Loggia, and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Al Israel.
Yes. And Stephen Bauer.
So yes, one original Latino. Yes, Stephen Bauer Manolo was in there.
Yes, playing
F. Murray Abraham.
Yes, the great Cuban-American actor F. Murray Abraham.
We are mere blocks from a CVS. It is now a CVS, but the chainsaw scene that took place in Scarface, famously blocks away from here.
But yes, of course, Stephen Bauer, the star of Que Pasa USA here in Miami, in the role of Manny Token Rivera in Scarface. I think he's the one Cuban American actor in the entire.
What is the legacy of greatest Miami rooted shows in television history? It's Miami Vice. But when you say Que Pasa USA, it made me think immediately of we don't have many historic Miami shows. I suppose we could take any of those religious ministries, Jim Baker and stuff,
yeah,
because
TVN
they were South going Florida. Through South Florida.
Yeah.
But we didn't have very many Miami produced nationally enduring things.
No, and the ones that were enduring, Dexter, Nip Tuck, barely shot in Miami any more than the pilot. CSI Miami was shot in like Long Beach, California. And so some of the most legendary and longest running Miami shows were not
Scarface
Miami shows at all.
Was mostly not in Miami.
Was mostly not in Miami because the city Miami commissioner at the time, Demetrio Perez Jr., chased them out of town because he wanted to censor the script. He wanted them to rewrite the script to have Tony Montana as a Fidel Castro spy who was sent here deliberately to become a cocaine trafficker. He didn't like the way Cubans were depicted in it. So Marty Bregman, the producer, and the director, Brian De Palma, were basically like, okay, let's just shoot what we need to shoot and get the hell out of here, and shot most of it on Ocean Drive and on Key Biscayne. But then they basically split town, and somehow
we got two sitcoms, The Golden Girls and its spinoff, Empty Nest.
And
setting in Miami.
And the second spinoff, Nurses.
Nurses.
Which actually, yes. Which famously they did a crossover event of a hurricane hitting Miami that hit all three shows, all of them shot in Los Angeles on a soundstage. That's the thing, is like most of the Miami stuff. And then there was like some fun Miami movies through the 90s. Bad Boys, The Birdcage, The Specialist with Sharon Stone and Sylvester Stallone, which is like a craptastic Miami movie. Just Cause with Sean Connery.
Let It Ride.
And Too Fast, Too Furious in the aughts. Let It Ride's a pretty fun movie.
But what is the 39-year anniversary of Scarface that we're celebrating this week?
Back when the movie came out, they released a soundtrack album with like 10 tracks. It was mostly songs from the album, like Rush Rush, Get the Yayo, Debbie Harry and Blondie. And then there was two tracks, the instrumental tracks by Giorgio Moroder, one of which was Tony's theme, one was like the love theme from the end credits. But the score album that Giorgio Moroder, the 80 minutes of music that Giorgio Moroder wrote, were never released on vinyl, on cassette, on CD, nothing. All that's ever existed was bootleg tracks ripped from a DVD or a Blu-ray. Get this, even on Giorgio Moroder's official SoundCloud, when he posted the opening credits music, the famous opening credits music from Scarface, it had dialogue from the movie. Even Giorgio Moroder ripped it from the DVD. It had like, you know, all the sound effects and the Fidel Castro speech and all that shit. And I was worried that like, oh, maybe the master tapes are lost, right? They're lost in some New Jersey attic or something, you know, and we'll never, ever hear this because even the composer himself doesn't have the original tracks. This week, Dan, it is a pop culture milestone. After 39 years of soundtrack specialty label out of California called La La Land Records. I feel like I'm in La La Land when I say this, because this is like a bucket list release. This week, they're finally releasing all of the unreleased music.
Yes.
Of Giorgio Moroder's legendary synth score to Scarface.
I remember Push It to the Limit. Push It to the Limit is what I remember.
Also produced by Giorgio Moroder, who did the songs as well as the score. But that's all we had. We had
it's
a 10-track
album. Just money counting. It's just counting money. Push It to the Limit. And now it's Tony, who is, again, not Cuban. It's Al Pacino running toward a tiger in an incredible drug cliche of a movie. Billy, good talking to you. Good talking to Defiti. Thank you to both of you. We will talk to you again next week because Miami.
Cocaines.
Dugatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. Springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes, and it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. I've had it in my home for many, many years. I love it. Springtime to me, we love to travel, and I love the fact that no matter where I am in the world, I can keep an eye on my home thanks to Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe blankets your whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more, plus a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. That's simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.